Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Jennifer Masters.
Who's in the middle this week?
That's why
she paused, because she's not. But I'm not Paul Carenza. This is weird.
She's also not sure of her own name at the best of times.
I'm Paul Carenza.
So is my wife. We put Jen in the middle this week because you're quite a little beast, aren't you, really?
Yeah, little beast.
Exactly, little beast. Well, I could have said big beast.
Yeah, huge, hulking brute of a thing.
Less the beast.
Oh, no, there's been a photo up now. So people can see the awful truth.
Indeed. In fact, we did have an email, didn't we, from someone.
Saying, my eyes, stop the hideousness. I think that's exactly what they said. Almost word for word is what they said.
Yes, in fact, we had an email from Super Toys saying, I noticed a new picture on my iPod with Jennifer the Masters. I like that. It's a good name, isn't it? That's your wrestling name.
Doctor Who.
Exactly. With Jennifer the Masters' head added in, but no body.
No, she doesn't actually have a body.
No.
Exactly. We should have really said this. She's just basically a head in a jar.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
you've ruined Seven now for everyone.
People might not have known it was Seven. It could be any Gwyneth Paltrow.
I've ruined Seven now for everyone.
I'd say not. It couldn't be any Gwyneth Paltrow films. It's probably not likely to be sliding doors.
I don't know. If the doors close quickly
enough. Very true. You never know. Just bang. Straight up. Platform, into a box. Well laid there. Kevin Spacey runs away, thus tying it into the next film.
Brilliant.
That could work.
Super say, is this your Back to the Future tribute photo? I didn't actually think of it in those terms. It was more cobbled together very late at night. But it does work on
actually,
that
would be
I
a nice like nice themed photo for us to do with the arm waving in the garden. And
T-shirt
disappear.
It?
That'd be quite cool.
Yeah. That's what we'll have to do.
Might do that, because we need a new photo, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, we do. So yes. This is why Jen had no body, because basically I suddenly thought, oh, Jen's always in here now, as he should be. And so should be in the photo, but we didn't actually have a photo of the three of us to hand.
No.
There must be one kicking around on the interpipes. But I just know,
we'll hire a photographer one week. You can come in here and sit in the corner and just sit in the corner.
This is taking a slightly unpleasant turn. What are you intending?
Well, maybe.
Oh dear.
So we'll do the photo thing. We're also thinking maybe doing some jingles and like. Let us know. Do you want us to do some jingles and music and all that? And
do you want an intro theme, or are you just happy with the hello?
You let us know how you want it to go. So we'll do that.
Superdoz does also say that he can't believe we gave mention to Howard the Duck. His brother and I watched it about a month ago. It's still a great film I remember from their early days, and by great he means terrible. I haven't seen it. I remember very clearly having a sort of sleepover at a friend's house, and we were all about 10 and watched it then, and we all thought it was awful then. But I think now, in a more experienced film going way, I'd like to watch it and tear it apart properly.
I do like the way, certainly, how because obviously you've got to be very careful when you read out an email. You get the pronoun right. I like the fact that you said his brother and I, implying that you, John, and his brother used to watch How the Duck
I did.
Super Toys was nowhere to be seen.
No, he wasn't. His brother and I, we're great mates. We hang out all the time.
Way back, don't you? You and Dave Toys.
They're slightly less Super Toys. Sort of normal toys. Super Toys and
second brother,
toys.
The first name's gone. You know, the parents going, what else can we name him? Average Toys.
Some Toys.
Speaking of things that we hate, Howard the Duck being one of them, he did say, I loved your hating on Final Destination. I think you should include one movie that you just hate and rip it apart more often.
No, that's true.
A good idea, and we are toying with the idea of a future special where we just lay into all the films that we absolutely cannot stand.
So, because also, slagging off films is just more fun.
It is,
really. Because, you know, singing the praise of something, it's good it exists, but there's no fun to be had. You can't really make jokes about something that, well, we can, but it's easier to make jokes about something you hate. Yeah. That's why we always joke about Jen.
Exactly.
Thanks. I'm going to have to do some proper thinking, though, because I think I tend to block out the films that I hate. I just try and suppress them and
yeah, I mean, it's hard to put out a list of films that I really... I mean, there are a few that I always remember I hate. But I've seen a couple in the past year that I've just thought, oh, it was awful, and I can't remember now what they are. So I keep mentioning
the same couple. Regular listeners will know. But, to be continued, I think it
is. Yes, I think so. Let's go back to
prioritise.
In the meantime, another couple of emails we've had an email from Mr. Jed, who we're talking about Desert Island Flicks, which we do at the end of every week's episode. And we've previously asked you in the last couple of weeks for your favourite modern World War II film. That doesn't mean from the last bit of the World War II. It means from... World War II film, from the modern age. And Jed suggests Clint Eastwood's terrific Flags of Our Fathers and the companion piece Letters from Iwo Jima, which felt gut-wrenchingly realistic and heartfelt. Yes, I've heard nothing but good things about them both, but haven't actually seen either. Well, they were in the cinemas here for about a week, if that, if you were lucky. You had to really hunt them down. I remember at the time it was when Epic Movie was out, and it was frustrating to try and find it. Not good, not good. Johan says that his favourite World War II film is probably Valkyrie or Inglourious Basterds. So two quite recent ones from the last year or so. And clearly he likes films where Hitler gets it,
or nearly gets it. And who doesn't?
Exactly. I love the former, as in Valkyrie, because it's a wonderful story and it's great lead acting by Tom Cruise. And he likes Inglourious Basterds because it's a fantastic World War II film as a whole. So there you go. Who'd argue with that? And also, because we equally previous week we were talking about best Tarantino films.
Yes.
Oh, right.
And Johan's favourite is either Sin City, where he was a guest director.
He directed one scene.
Right. Oh, okay.
Which is when Clive Owen's talking to Benicio del Toro after Benicio del Toro is dead. And they sort of have a chat in the car, and Quentin Tarantino did that one scene. But I think you can't really. If you claim that as your favourite Tarantino film,
you're not a Tarantino fan either.
It's a bit of a stretch. It could be argued it's better than any of Quentin Tarantino's films, Sin City, but you're kind of clutching at straws.
Johan also saying that he liked him acting in Takeshi Mike's film Sukiyaki Western. Django, as Ringo, a wise cowboy, during the War of the Roses. So, again, I think Tarantino's most famous moment.
Oh, that's not one I've heard of.
Either Johan doesn't really like Tarantino, or, I think this is more likely, Johan's showing off that he knows about every single little obscure Tarantino thing.
But I'm also slightly envious of that knowledge.
Very good.
See, he doesn't do much acting, even in his own films, but I kind of like him in stuff. Like, from Dusk Till Dawn, he's good in.
Oh, yes.
And also, is it he's a barman in Desperado.
Is that when he just comes and tells a joke and then goes pretty much?
And then gets shot.
Yeah. Why not?
Perfect.
So that's our
emails.
Yes, and that's the comments on Desert Island Flicks as well, which we could set now for this week. At this early stage of the show. One of the films we'll be looking at briefly in the show. Lots to cram in this week.
Yes.
We've got District 9, 500 Days of Summer, Funny People, and Julie and Julia. And which is about cooking.
Yes.
So we thought, well, let's have our best cooking
film.
Film about cooking, really? And food.
Also, because it's quite nice, I think, anyway, with Desert Island Flicks to have a relatively narrow range to choose from.
Yeah, I think so.
You need a decent selection, but not sort of best film ever, because it just covers too wide range.
Yeah, there's so many good films out there. You've got to
compartmentalise it.
You can tell as well that we're on podcast episode number 43 by now. Because
we're running out of ideas.
You get to best cooking film.
Best film with a Y in the title.
Next film, best scuba diving film involving clowns.
in which case, you got Scuba Diving Clown 1 to 7.
Well, exactly. Which one do you pick?
They dropped off after 4, much like the Police Academy.
I think we should do a whole special 1 week just on Scuba Diving Clown films.
We've got the equipment.
It's very difficult. You've got the big clown feet, but also flippers. It's very tricky.
Well, the clown feet work as flippers.
They do, actually, don't
they? W is good.
Yeah.
What is tricky is the makeup comes off in the water.
Now you can get waterproof makeup, I'm sure.
And also,
oil-based.
And also, you've got your little flower. It squirts water, people, but what does it do?
No, but then you can get an inverted clown, and rather than squirting water, it squirts air.
And that's what you breathe out of. And that's that's the big twist at the end of Scuba Diving Clown 6, isn't it? When they breathe using the
he's been sabotaged.
I love those films.
Classics.
I'm really hoping someone emails in and says, I've never heard of these films. How do I get hold of these?
They may just be sort of British famous, very famous.
It must be,
You can only get them on Region 2.
One day America will come along and ruin it by remaking them.
I know, they'll do it. Yeah, they'll maybe be like Scuba Diving Marine Clowns.
Add Nicolas Cage, you know. be rubbish.
Replace them all with a young, sexy cast rather than the traditional one.
Ruining
our national heritage.
I speak on behalf of us all when I say, anyway.
Yes, let's move on.
Let's talk about some film, shall we?
Yes. Why not?
District 9.
I'd say District 9. We've all seen it.
It's a biggie. It's the biggie, probably the biggie of the last 7 days.
True.
I think so.
Bound to be number 1 in the cinema. What do we think of it?
I thought it was really extremely impressive.
Yes.
Considering, because he's a first-time director, isn't he?
He is.
Has he been cinematographer or...?
He'd made a short film, which is based on.
Right.
Called, I think, Trouble in Joburg. And which indeed, if you see the film, you realise there's a lot of trouble in Joburg, according to this film. But it's first time director, really, based on his short. And the main actor in it is also the guy from the short film as well, who has also never acted before. So
he's got wheeled out in front
of the film. First time director, first time writer, and I think he's marvellous.
Because
it's relatively low budget. It was like $30 million or something. That's the number I keep crops up in my head, which is low budget in modern terms. And yet, what they do with it is really quite impressive.
Excellent, yeah, yeah.
Very good.
I mean, the premise, in case you've missed viral marketing and all the rest of it, is 20 years ago, an alien spaceship arrived on Earth, hovering over Johannesburg, and the aliens appeared to be in some sort of distress, were all shuttled off down to a camp in Johannesburg called District 9. And then, over time, they've not really integrated into society, but they're just kind of normal. They're just aliens who are trying to survive on Earth. I mean, they look alien, but they behave relatively normally, slightly animalistic, but they have language and they talk and they interact. And when we join the film, they're just about to be exported out into a camp many miles away, and things start happening.
And so that part of the film is quite an interesting film because... as you can probably tell by the trailer, you think, okay, it's set in South Africa. Obviously, there's an apartheid issue there as well.
Yes.
And I think certainly that early part of the film brings all that to mind.
Yes.
But in a, I mean, it's sort of obvious, but it is quite subtle. I don't sort of beat you over the head with it. Look, it's an apartheid analogy.
And it's not just making a massive point with it, saying, look how worthy we are as well. It's an entertainment-based film that happens to have got a couple of issues in it.
Yeah.
And then, I'll be honest, I didn't see as well where it's going to go with it, because in the trailer, there's not much about where it goes from there, really.
No, it's just basically, here's the setup. I mean, I always think that's what most trailers should be anyway, just saying, here's the setup.
Yeah.
Doesn't this look like it could be interesting?
Yeah.
Go and see the film.
And after the first 10-15 minutes, I didn't know where it's going to go. It was brand new.
Yeah.
So, which was great. I really enjoyed the ride. I thought it was an excellent film.
Yeah, because it's in a weird... Well, not a weird sub, but it's a sort of half documentary-esque.
Mm.
With sort of clips of interviews with the people involved.
Yeah.
But kind of after the events of the film. But then half not. And they kind of mix and match, but not in a... confused way. It just, you know, sometimes it's relevant to see those bits, and sometimes you're just watching it like an
awful
film.
A few moments where I was thinking, we're not in the documentary now, are we?
Yes.
Because the camera wouldn't be there.
No, that's true.
And they would know about this.
Yeah. But it's still got that shaky camera that sort of says, you know, a bit like The Office, and a bit sort of, is it real, is it not?
Is someone following them, or is it where you just watch
exactly.
Really,
but I
it?
Think with a suspension of disbelief, the film's good enough to actually allow that.
Yeah.
I think it's still good.
But I think also, I mean, it almost works because it makes you feel more involved. I think if you detach yourself from it a bit and you're not trying to work out whether it's documentary bit or not, you just sort of, it sort of blends to a degree because you just still feel like it is, even though it's not, but it involves you because of that.
Yeah, I don't know if you know the history of the film with where this guy came from, but he was originally hooked up to direct the Halo film.
Oh, yes, I did know that.
Based on the computer game, with Peter Jackson producing it. And then that all fell through for various reasons. So Peter Jackson, I think this guy was quite gutted because he'd never really made a full-length film, and he was instantly going to be making Halo, quite a big,
which is going to be huge.
Quite a big thing. And then Peter Jackson basically said, okay, I'll give you $30-40 million to make whatever you want. And he went, okay, brilliant. and Peter Jackson said, I'll produce it, I'll be at your beck and call, really, if you want some creative help or just... help out the business generally. And Peter Jackson's made his money back and then some, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show what, you know, if you've got a mentor like Peter Jackson who just says, have some money, make your dream.
Yeah.
Then
and also if you've
wonderful.
Established that you've got enough vision and drive and ability to get that sort of trust from someone.
Yeah.
That then it could be almost hands off. You know, I trust that you have talent. Here's the money. Make the best thing you can. Oh, look, you've turned out something brilliant.
Yeah. And the thing is, because it's a relatively low budget, I think the studio's kept out their way quite a bit. And
it's,
so it's pretty much his entire vision.
Yeah.
The worry is that now, clearly, of course, he'll do the difficult second picture.
Yes.
And studios will say, have more money. We'll give you $400 million. And, oh, but we want to say in quite a lot more of that.
Yeah.
So hopefully he'll stay on the right side of it. But
The thing with this film is that it really is about the personal story. That's what makes it so special, and why you don't need like big budget explosions. And there are some, you know, pretty cool gadgets at the end, but it's really justified because we've invested so much in these characters.
Yeah.
That it's quality, not quantity.
Yeah, because by the end of the film, it does. I mean, a harsh way of putting it, it almost goes sort of more generic in terms of running and shooting. But, yeah, like you say, it makes sense. That's where the story goes. That's what needs to happen. And there's still stuff going on through that. So it's not just simplistic as, hey, let's have a shootout. There's a lot more going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope this is the way that more films might go. Now that computer effects have got to the point where, with a mere $30 million... Because apparently all of the aliens were CGI. There were no people in suits, physical anything. It was all CGI.
Really? Not even, like, in the car?
No, it's none of it.
Wow.
CGI the whole way through. And while it doesn't look... I mean, you can sort of see it's CGI, but it's believable at the same time. It's kind of like Doctor Who, in a weird way. in that they look like effects, but you're involved, and so it doesn't really matter that it's slightly... You can see the joins because it's irrelevant.
And some of them work, you know, at times you can see, but most of it works really well. I think that's, you know, a credit to the different kind of filming techniques. The fact, you know, rough around the edges, it does sort of blend a little bit more.
Yeah, if you're sort of seeing occasional through security cameras or slightly handheld things, it doesn't really matter if you're not getting long, thick shots where you can really critique it, because that's not what the film's about.
Mm.
But, I worry I'm giving the impression that, you know, the effects look a bit shoddy, which really isn't the case.
No.
I mean, I'm just looking at it with a geek's eye. Yeah, so I'm hoping that more films might go this way, and that, you know, with $30 million you can put in lots of effects and do your own thing, so you can actually fulfil your own vision without any studio involvement, without worrying about mass marketability, because it doesn't need to make that much money in order to make its money back.
Yeah.
And then you can make lots of good films.
Yeah, yeah. I think probably the fact that it was little studio interference probably led to it being entirely, you know, set in Johannesburg and...
Yeah, because otherwise they would have said, no, let's make it LA.
Unknown actors. And the main actor was brilliant in it.
Yes,
Shanto Copley, I think his name is. And he's the only thing he's ever done. He's brilliant in it. It's not... They haven't made it American... it fits the location really well,
and I think
that it's brilliant for that thing.
John, didn't you say that a lot of the script itself had been sort of improvised or
workshopped? Well, that's what I was going to say. I heard that from somewhere. I think it may actually be my flatmate who I saw it with, Paul from you, Paul.
I read the same thing actually.
Well, that's perfect for, you know, a new actor and stuff. I mean, it's so natural.
There's no stilted delivery. It's all just sort of flows forward.
He knows the way into the scene, the way out the scene. But apart from that, it's up to him. Yeah.
No, he was really good. And the real, you know, he's not like the stereotypical good-looking hero. He's just like a normal bloke that you really care about.
Mm. Well, when you first see him, he reminds me a lot of Rhys Darby in Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just he's got kind of a sweater, a tank top jumper, and a short sleeve shirt, and he looks a bit geeky.
Yeah, quite jolly, but you can tell he's a bit of a nerd.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, yeah.
But then, I mean, he doesn't really radically change, but he becomes... Yeah, I mean, his character evolves naturally.
Well, yeah, and I found that really refreshing as well at the start, that he's sort of a bad guy as well, really. And the way he's dealing with some of the aliens. He's sort of saying, they don't like that one, you know, just shoot that fella over there. And they're being really quite, you know, radical, really, in what they're doing to these aliens.
Yeah. He wasn't as bad as some.
But we grow to like him.
He wasn't as bad as some, but there's moments... Well, he was just, like, dealing with a pest problem kind of thing.
Yeah. See, that's something that's never really addressed in the film, is that they clearly feel that aliens have some rights, because they give them out, rather than just exterminating them all. They sort of, you know...
Covering their arse, really, more than anything.
Well, yeah, but then, when they go into District 9, they have no real qualms about shooting them if they have to, or, you know, killing their young, and...
Yeah.
So it's a slightly... It's... I don't know, if you waste your time thinking about it. It's slightly disjointed on that level. Or I'd like to know more about what the situation is.
But that, I thought, made it quite irrelevant to the film. That made the interesting sort of political point, I thought, regardless of South Africa, for a minute, in terms of kind of going into this alien population, whether you take alien as an extraterrestrial or just the the human version of alien, then you're going in there and on paper treating them with the legal rights and with respect, but actually in reality going, we can kill them, that's okay.
Yeah, because if you do shoot them, who's going to...
Yeah, the aliens who's going to know? Yeah. Exactly. So that made a good point.
The treatment did seem pretty believable. I mean, I came out thinking, aren't the humans just... Aren't we utter gits? We're awful. I mean, that could be a way that very easily could go.
Well, that's exactly... I was watching it thinking, if you get over the fact that there's aliens,
put
that aside, everything that happens in the movie... happens for consecutive logical reasons. You can sort of see, I can see how it would lead to that, and to that, and to that, and before you know it, they are suddenly annihilating these people.
They're just in a slum.
Needlessly, really.
Imprisoned,
Yeah, so I thought that was quite interesting. And I thought very interesting as well was, it's probably the film where I've most managed to empathise with aliens.
Yes.
Well, the two main aliens, or it's the main one and his son, are the only ones who are given more human facial expressions. It may also just be that we see them more, but I think the animators spent more time working on making them look slightly more sympathetic to the other aliens, but not radically. I mean,
they've
don't
got more
really
emotions.
Notice it.
They've yes.
But
so
then even there's the moment where they bring a random kidnapped alien into a room and set him up against a bullseye.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's the sort of scene in a film where, okay, you're about to shoot someone, an alien's about to be shot. In a normal film, even if it's like the aliens are good or bad or just indifferent, normally you get over that pretty quickly. But that scene felt quite grueling. Like,
yeah,
there was a gasp in the cinema from this alien being.
And they do very good body language, I think, in the construction of the alien, and it just looks confused, not knowing why it's there, what's happening, what's going on. Without, does it have any dialogue in that?
I don't know if it does actually.
But you get, you exactly can understand what the alien is feeling and why, because of everything else that's going on in the scene as well.
Yeah, they just normally always seem confused and bewildered as to their treatment. I mean, you can tell that these creatures are probably quite strong, but most of the time you see them, they're in self-defence. They're trying to cover themselves and protect themselves from
And they mostly, I think, just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
Sort of sat in there. Yeah, they've made a home. I think that's why the 20-year gap helps as well. Mm. And we see them first arriving. Then 20 years later, the novelty's worn off. But also, there's sort of a stability has been reached. I mean, there are some protests, but nothing too radical. And it's more just everyone trying to get along, sort of, but then with company influences trying to mix things up again.
Mm-hmm. It's got a lot in it, this film.
No, I really say, if you haven't seen it, then seek it out, definitely. As long as you know, if you like sci-fi or fantasy in that sort of way, I think it's a very good film.
It's a very realistic sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Like you say, if you get on board with the idea, okay, aliens arrived 20 years ago, they're here.
Yeah.
And then it's a very, it's almost a human story.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Go and see it.
Yeah, no, one of my top five of the year, certainly, I would say.
Yes.
And, and I don't know if they'll do a District 10.
Well, there's talk of a sequel already.
Yeah,
in a way, I kind of think.
Yeah, but then it has such a lovely ending. It fit together nicely.
Lovely may not be quite the right
word. Well, not quite the word.
Yeah, but it's the...
But unresolved, I mean...
Well, it was there. I think everything you needed was on the screen there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of both. I think it could go either way. If there wasn't, it doesn't set up for a sequel, definitely. But there is definitely room for a sequel to take the story somewhere rather than just more of the same. Mm. There's definitely an opening to, you know, rework things a bit.
Yeah.
So we shall see. Yeah. Frankly. I'd be amazed if there wasn't one.
Yeah. I think I'd be slightly... This stuff I want to find out. I mean, obviously, with this film, these creatures are treated like drones, like wasps or something. They're just, you know, doing their work or whatever. But there must be a higher intelligence because they've come here. And it'd be nice to actually see, okay, you've treated us badly.
High command.
These are the real ones. Now we're really coming.
But at the same time, but then it might just degenerate into kind of Independence Day in reverse. Independence Day.
I hope, like you were saying, it keep its integrity, but there's more story to be told.
Well, maybe. I like the fact it was...
The more potential,
it was
anyway.
It was and self-contained and the fact that these aliens are just there and they're not neither good nor bad. You know, the ones you see in the camp at the start can be quite lazy, aggressive, some of them, but...
But also
have
children
they're
looking
people.
After. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Hmm.
Yes.
We shall see.
So anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, next. I think we should. I'd say 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Because it's the next biggest down the list.
I haven't seen it. You two have, I believe. So,
well, what did you think about it, Paul?
Open brackets, 500, close brackets, Days
of Summer. Yeah, the brackets made no sense. It's just irritating. And apparently pretty much everyone reviewing is just calling it 500 Days of Summer. Because
who has time
for brackets?
It looks... I think I'm going to like it, but it looks quirky.
The point of the title is it's about a relationship between Tom and Summer, not the season Summer, but a girl named Summer.
I was thinking a different Ann Summer thing.
Tom being
Tom, that's a porn version.
You'd be exhausted. Yes, Tom played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Summer played by Zoe Deschanel. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'm starting to really quite like. I think, because he's done a mix of things. I remember a while ago now, we were talking about up-and-coming, sort of mid-range actors, if that makes sense. Not brand-new, you know, your Zac Efrons or your well-established Brad Pitts, but someone in the middle range. And I think, actually, he's someone who slightly snuck in under the radar, sort of, because he tends to do some indie things.
He was doing high school acting 10
years
ago, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was in 10 Things I Hate About You. Yeah. But he's also done sort of this, which is slightly indie, but quite mainstream, but also Brick, which is a bit random, also G.I. Joe. He was Cobra Commander in that, and so he's covering a range.
He looks about 12.
Well,
the
character plays up.
He looks so young.
No, but I think he's destined for. He's going to go on to bigger and better things. He also looks a bit like Heath Ledger.
He did a bit.
I can see just a bit. I think it's a face shape. Which is coincidental, given that he was in 10 Things I Hate About You with Heath Ledger.
Well, I was going to say, are you sure you're not looking at a picture of him from 10 Things I Hate About You, saying looks a bit like Heath Ledger there?
No, definitely not. No, he doesn't look. He is 28. See, so he's younger than us. Yeah, but he's slightly younger than us. But he doesn't look.
But seeing him in a suit, I did suddenly think he looks like some sort of. I don't know. He's borrowed his dad's suit.
Maybe a little bit. Anyway, but yes, but so the film is sort of, it's getting labelled as a rom-com, which I think does it a disservice, because it's more, I mean, it has comedy moments, more comedy than drama moments, but it's essentially a drama. It's just tracking the relationship between these two people. which isn't entirely conventional. And the film covers 500 days, but it jumps about within that.
Very good effect. It's a very good effect.
And so we see, and I mean, they break up about halfway through, which isn't giving anything away because it's not linear. We find out within the first couple of minutes. It pretty much may even start off, in fact, with them having just broken up. We see sort of day 288, and they've broken up. And so it covers, you know, the happy times and the sad times, then breaking up, him trying to get over her, and just the whole thing. And it jumps around, but does it very neatly. Because every time we change, a title card comes up with the day we've just been looking at. So it goes sort of 288, and then spins back down to 1 when they first meet.
Okay.
And then it'll jump back to 1 and flick up to 7. And then...
That's all I wanted on the Time Traveller's watch.
I was just thinking
that's what I was after.
Yeah, I thought it was a good addition to have... Because we see, you know, it says spinning up to day 200, and then when you finish that scene, you then see 200 again, and then it flips to wherever you were.
Yeah.
So you don't have to kind of remember where you just were.
Good.
And also the background of the title card reflects kind of the state of their relationship. So like day 1, it's all bright and cheerful. And then sort of day 300, it's gone quite black. But it was just a very... It's very nicely acted and well put together. Very good soundtrack as well, I thought.
Yeah, two songs
by Regina Spektor, who I love.
Right.
And it opens with one by her, which got me on board from the start.
Has it got the song You Make My Dreams Come True by Hall & Oates?
It does indeed.
Because it has in the trailer. And when I first saw the trailer, I was humming that for about a week. So I'm glad it's in the film as well.
Well, yes. And yet that song is also in The Wedding Singer, which you hate.
True.
But anyway.
Times change.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... I feel there should be more to say, but it's almost quite a simple story, but interestingly told.
Yeah, it's not a conventional kind of
No, it's... I mean, the narrator at the start says, it should be made very clear, this is not a love story. And it's...
And no, it's really, not. He means it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a story. It's not even really a story about love, because, I mean, the gist is that Tom believes in love and has the idea of, you know, he's looking for the right person.
Well, it's a nice twist on the standard thing, isn't it, of the woman being the romantic one.
Yes.
Now we have, so that's a nice thing they're keyed into.
But that. Even that, they don't sort of labour too much. They sort of state near the start that she just doesn't believe that in love and doesn't want to label things, and basically, as long as they're together, they'll be together. And then we see how it declines.
I heard the writers talking about the fact that... firstly, I heard them describe it not so much as either a romantic comedy or anti-romantic comedy, but just a kind of... there's three of the guys who've written it, and their experiences of relationship all sort of put together.
Yeah.
Because they felt that there's this character who Zoe Deschanel clearly plays, which is the manic pixie dream girl, has been called,
yes.
I think. Quite a few years ago, who often appears in films as a staple of the indie comedy, but is always wonderful and kind of settles the main hero of it, and then they go off together and live happily ever after. But of course, these writers said, well, no, they never deal with the fact that manic pixie dream girls don't really settle well. They go off and they're flighty.
Yeah.
And so that's what they really wanted to put into the film.
Yeah, and also, she's not... I mean, the trailer might... I don't think they overblow it. Might give the impression of her being sort of kooky and a bit lame, but it's all... No one is at extremes in this film. Everyone's kind of normal, believable characters. And while, I mean, she's not kooky and zany, we see her apartment at one point, and she's got some... Not even odd things, but just distinctive things. But you just think, well, no, that's just what she likes. And then they say, look, I've done this, aren't I mental? No, it's just, she happens to have a couple of paintings she likes and has made a sculpture. But it's all quite normal.
Because there's some kooky, zany, weirdy, kinky... just zany and kooky. Let's do it with
that.
Is
this alternative Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? Kooky, zany, kinky.
That's quite right.
Oh, dear. Disney may have rejected those.
Oh, dear. There's quite... Sometimes you see those characters in films and you just want to slap them.
Well, yeah, and also you're just very aware, think, well, no one actually exists like that. I mean, whereas Summer, I feel, could actually exist as a character. Mm. You get the feeling she's slightly... Not troubled as such, but her views on relationships, she has those views for a reason.
Mm.
But we never find out really what they are. But she... I mean, it may just be because her parents divorced, and that's why she doesn't believe. But then Tom's his parents divorced, but he still believes in love as an ideal.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is that she has these opinions, and you want to change your mind. You want to go, well, hang on, okay, yeah, you feel this, but wait, because you'll change, because this is what's going to happen, because this is what happens in films. And obviously it doesn't quite transpire that way.
Yeah, because it's a far more normal... Well, yeah, it's just it covers them... what feels like a more normal range of human relationships.
Mm.
That makes sense. And you can believe that she might have that attitude.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, because the thing is, it would be in your... And mine seem to change your mind and say, no, but you know, you only feel that way because you haven't yet met the right person. But at the same time, I was thinking, well, I bet lots of people actually do feel how she feels, and kind of just keep it, not even keep it casual, because they get quite coupley. But the fact that there's no concrete aspect to their relationship starts to bother him, and she's quite happy with it, despite the fact that was always meant to be the groundwork they laid.
Mm.
And it's not even casual to go, no, we'll see other cheap people, and he can't handle it, because they are very much a couple. But she just wants to keep the distance to a degree that he's not happy with.
Hmm. I think that the audience, though, I mean, I find myself sympathising with his character, because it is from his viewpoint.
Yes, yeah, we follow him almost entirely. Yeah.
And I think she's built up, obviously, through his eyes, and that's the point of the film.
Yes, especially a bit later on, when we sort of see moments sort of through his eyes, but as he looks at them again. And because another character or his sister says, oh, well, take another look back and just, you know, think about it more. And he does, and you start saying, well, yeah, I suppose looking at that event this way round, then, yeah, I can see that doesn't look too good.
I think it's a good film. You can draw connections if it's anyone who's ever sort of had faith or lack of faith in love or destiny and things like that. It gives you quite a, sometimes probably harsh,
way of
reflecting.
It's not rose-tinted as such, but it's more... But nor is it bleak, just for the sake of being bleak. Yeah, it's a bit of both. That's why it treads a nice line.
Refreshing for cinema.
Yeah. And the ending is believable as well.
Yeah.
I'd say whether happy or sad or what or when. But yeah. It all works out kind of in a way that feels right, anyway. So, yeah, so I liked it a lot.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I don't think it'll win over... I mean, anyone who says, I hate rom-coms, but I loved this, I can't quite see that happening.
Right.
Really. I mean, for example, my flatmate, who hates romantic comedies and has no sense of sentiment whatsoever, I don't think he'd like this, really. But he might like it a bit more than a romantic comedy if forced to watch it. But it's just a better film
but
than a rom-com.
But a good way in enlivening the romantic comedy genre. Anyway,
yeah,
which,
definitely.
Which lately I felt, I mean, I haven't seen many late in the cinema, but the trailers I've seen of Katherine Heigl and Sandra Bullock and I just think, oh, okay, it's another formulaic thing. So this seems to have a bit more heart.
Having said that, of the three that I'm aware of this sort of film season, there's been The Proposal, which I thought was quite good, The Ugly Truth, which was and now soon to come out, or just come out in America, is one called All About Steve.
Oh, yeah, Sandra Bullock again, isn't it?
And that's being slated.
Really?
That's been torn apart.
With
it's just
Bradley Cooper, I think.
Yes,
isn't it?
And it just seems to be awful. Yeah. And it's largely Sandra Bullock plays just kind of the wrong version of something. It's kind of kooky, zany, a bit mental, but done all wrong with no subtlety.
I saw the trailer today, actually, and it looks like she's just stalking this man.
Yeah, but with no real jokes.
And it looks a bit uncomfortable. Anyway, and again, the age gap there, I mean, it looks like she's sort of 10 years older than the guy who she's chasing.
Yeah.
Which, again, is fine, but the fact that Sandra Bullock keeps on making these films where slowly she's going to get further and further away in age to the leading man age.
But the stupid thing is, given, I mean, stereotypical attitudes saying, oh, men improve with age and women don't, which isn't obviously as simple as that. But given that, I mean, there must be lots of men Sandra Bullock's age...
Well,
leading men who would work a treat.
Look
so
at
why
the,
not?
I was going to say, nice in 500 Days of Summer to see Zoe Deschanel with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who looks about 12, and not with Jim Carrey, as in Yes Man.
Yes,
it's only 40. And that looked uncomfortable. I'd much rather see her with Jojie L than with JC. But why not Jim Carrey and Sandra Bullock? Put them together, by all means, and keep the young'uns to the young'uns.
I know, it's just slightly weird. But at least make it a... plot-worthy point, rather than just sort of do it and then it's a bit weird and you go...
But it's all about pride, isn't it? Pride, agency...
Well, and also, to be honest, who will sell? Bradley Cooper at the moment is a name, but he's also cheaper than some.
Yes.
And especially if you're making a film that isn't going to be that good, as the filmmakers must have known, you want to keep it as cheap as possible. You've got to draw the line between sellability and price.
How much are we going to lose on this?
And
exactly,
Bradley Cooper is probably right at the exact point.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But we've digressed. Yeah, Final Days, it's a good... It's not like an antidote to romantic comedies, but it's the best example of one for the sake of simplicity.
I would maybe put it in the same sort of pile as Juno and Ultimate Playlist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Yes. I think I'd also say so when Harry Met Sally and... Before Sunrise.
Hmm. Okay, so chatty, sort of.
Yeah, the sort of chat. I mean, it is romantic and it is comedic, but it's more telling an interesting story.
Yeah.
Rather than just, hey, it's a couple and they get together, they split up, and hey, they're together at the end. There's more to it than that.
But it's good. Go and see it.
It is extremely good.
I look forward to it. Incidentally, you can. There's also online. Have a look on YouTube. There's a thing called The Bank Dance, which is an outtake of the film that they just filmed this little dance.
What, in 500 Days of Summer?
Yes.
Okay.
The two main characters in that, they just, and it's nothing to do with the film, it's just them doing it. Little quirky sketch thing. Worth a look.
I'll show you a minute. Okay. Actually, there was also one that I, because I was adding pictures for it to my, my site, and they were, I saw one, because they refer to each other, or in conversation, they come up as Sid and Nancy. Sid Vicious and Nancy. And there's a photo of them, presumably a publicity photo, sort of dressed like Sid and Nancy in bed together, but with her as Sid and him as Nancy, with like a blonde wig and a bra on. And I just sort of saw a thumbnail and I thought, is that? What's... Oh,
dear. Oh,
okay, that's not in the film. That must have been some publicity shot they did.
Fair enough, they had some fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a slight dance sequence in it, but largely just him when he's happy. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's very good comedy, kind of.
Yeah. There are a couple of weird touches where it's sort of quite normally directed, and then suddenly they'll go split screen for a bit, and you'll see two ideas, and then it'll be quite normal again, and then suddenly you get a drawn bit. Not an animated bit, but sort of a slight mini sequence.
Oh, I do just want to say one thing. His sister gave a lovely performance. She's a great character. She got little small parts, and she is wise beyond her years.
Well, although I was, because I enjoyed her and thought that she was good and sort of filled a role and was also quite believable, but I was thinking about the thing you've said, Paul, in that it's a small girl who sounds like a Jewish writer.
Oh, I see.
A middle-aged Jewish man. Not too much, but a little bit.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you're sort of stereotypical, the younger child with great wisdom, but she works and she fits the
job. She works down the mine.
Yes. Yeah. Cleaning chimneys.
Angelina Jolie's sweatshop. Anyway,
on.
While the lawyers get hold of us.
Yes.
Interesting, speaking, if you want to get hold of us, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Unless you're a lawyer.
Unless you're a lawyer, which
in
case.
Which case, it's legalthings at legalthings.com.
Exactly. Also, we're on twitter.com /moviebanter or /moviemistakes or /PaulKerenza. KERENSA.
You see, if you've got a weird name.
Or what else online? You could also go to moviemistakes.com. You could also go to themovietimeline.com, which has spawned in this week in movie history.
Hey!
I knew I'd find the link eventually if I worked hard enough.
Oh. So there you go. A long journey, that one.
Good, let's swap round.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit like the blankety blank thing when the screen goes around.
If you're not listening at home, which is all of you, we've not moved. But we just throw that in just to play around. This is where Jen's sneakily glances at the screen just so she can cheat.
Well,
you're going to say you can't read.
I can't read.
I never learned to read.
Okay, in this week in movie history, I'll say a thing, you say a thing back. And if the thing matches the thing in my head, you win a prize.
What's the prize?
Punch in the face.
Oh.
Okay.
Another one.
It goes a bit like this. Okay, the year is 1917. The date is September the 13th. Incident, I thought we'd skip past all the September 11th stuff because I could have done World Trade Center 1993, but let's assume that's not really part of an entertaining quiz segment of the show.
No,
okay,
good.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
1917, September the 13th. George stops his time machine and learns that his friend David Filby was killed in the war.
That's going to have to be the time machine.
Correct.
Just because if you stop the time machine, I think that's the only film I know of where it's basically a time machine with a big slider on it. You just go, go, no, stop. Oh,
exactly. I was hoping I might throw you off saying that, you might think George, or it could be George McFly, time machine, back to the future.
He was never in the time machine.
Exactly, exactly. Rookie error.
You can't catch us out there.
September the 14th, 1998. Viagra is introduced, and comedy writers everywhere rejoice.
I'm guessing funny people.
No, it's from Bullworth. It's a bit of a... Exactly.
Okay,
it's not. It's, you had your easy one last week where they're all Back to the Future. This week, it's trickier. Okay. September the 17th. This is easier. Okay. September 17th, 1897. Van Helsing, Harker and others destroy Dracula's lair at Carfax Abbey, but the Count escapes to take Mina as his bride.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I was hoping you'd say Van Helsing. You didn't.
No.
It is Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the Mina reference, though.
Ah. 1916, also September 17th, 1916, Manfred von Richthofen shoots down his first plane.
Oh, that's going to be... I can't think of the name of the film now.
At the time, he's just called Manfred von Richthofen, but later on, he'd be known as...
Red Baron?
The Red Baron, exactly. That's the film.
No, that wasn't the film I was thinking of.
And
last film. Okay. This is one for you, Jen. Last one for you.
Kittens.
Okay, yeah.
Kittens and rabbits and rainbows and
exactly.
Unicorns.
It's all about sanitary products. sorry.
sorry.
Yeah, I love watching films about that.
Exactly.
Well, who doesn't?
2005, September 17th. The Tottington Hall Vegetable Competition.
Oh, it...
Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
it.
Oh, why?
Oh, sorry. You could tell she was nearly going to answer. That's why I jumped in.
Oh. It's one of the few pleasures I get.
The winner this week is John.
Which also makes me the loser.
Exactly. So, good. That was that.
And, this week in movies, dream.
Good.
We have two more films.
Funny People, which we're about a week or so behind on mentioning because it was out a couple of weeks ago. But I finally got to see it this week. It was very odd going to see it on the way to a gig. particularly in the film, it's about stand-up comedy, and you see a couple of stage deaths, and I thought, this isn't a good warm-up to my show tonight, this isn't good.
Well, surely you can get hints on what not to do.
Well, very true,
don't
exactly.
Be rubbish.
Pretty much. I think it's a troubled film. It's a far too long film, for a start. This is from Judd Apatow. That's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Something like that. I'm waiting for you to do a Batman film, then it can be called Judd Apatow. Thing that I had on the screen.
No. Yeah, I know, but no. No. I've tried to purge all memory of 60s Batman.
I'm waiting for him to do a film called China in Your Hand, so it can be called Judd Apatow.
That's slightly better.
Thank you very much indeed.
Minimally improved.
I'll accept that patronising round of applause.
Applaud him.
Thank you.
I quite like that.
Good, thank you. So it's him who did Knocked Up and
40-Year-Old Virgin.
And it's got Adam Sandler in it as the famous one. He's a famous comedian in this. You've got Seth Rogen as up-and-coming stand-up comedian. Jonah Hill as the only actor in it who hasn't already been a stand-up comedian, even though he's all right in the film. But everything everyone else in the film had done stand-up, he hadn't. And I read, actually, that Jonah Hill was very nervous doing this film because he had to go on stage and do a stand-up act, as did everyone else in the cast at some point. Mm. And everyone else, like Seth Rogen, did stand-up, hasn't for years, but, he was okay at doing it again. Jonah Hill, a bit worried. Though, weirdly, I found all of the stand-ups in it, Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen, and there's a couple of... there's a girl in it as well, and there's Jason Schwartzman as well. And I just thought all of the stand-ups, for me, I'm being quite hypercritical here now, none of them were that convincing. I'm waiting, because I'm left waiting to see a stand-up comedian film where it's quite convincing.
Yeah.
And it was not bad. But they all, just for me, it looked like they were all really, really nervous. Mm. Even though Adam Sandler was playing this multi-millionaire,
well-established
Hollywood stand-up comedian, I do wonder if just because he hasn't done it for a little while, I expect... and some stand-up comedians do that, sort of hand in pocket, quite shy. I'm just gonna tell some jokes for you here. But they all do that. Yeah. That's the thing. None of them goes out and does Robin Williams and goes, hey, or Chris Rock, and just goes, hey, here's some jokes for you.
Especially the actors shouldn't have been nervous doing it because they're in front of a crowd who's going to laugh, whatever. It's not that they have to impress anyone.
Well, true, but to make it look good, they had to entertain them as a stand-up crowd would.
Yeah. Do you think that's just something, because obviously you're a comic, that, that... we would notice, or
maybe not. I think, to be fair, they actually do it pretty well, and the fact that they there are jokes in there that are good, there are a couple of
which is
routines
unusual
which
film,
are
stand-up comedy.
Quite funny that I could see working as a stand-up set. There's one hilarious non-stand-up scene with lots of cameos, which is very, very funny. It's got Sarah Silverman and Dave Attell and Ray Romano and Eminem and people, and it's very, very funny. The rest of the film could have done with more scenes like that.
Yeah,
I felt it was a film of two halves. It starts off with, it's all about Adam Sandler, multimillionaire Hollywood actor and comedian, who's made, what's quite nice is they've made lots of spoof posters and spoof clips of films, like him in Merman, him in a film called Redo, when he plays a baby and it's like a body swap comedy. Mm. So it's the sort of bad comedy films that he's done.
Yes,
that's the weird thing. So he's this guy, and then he finds out he hasn't got long to live. So he hires Seth Rogen, who's an upcoming comedian, to write for him and to be his assistant generally. And then halfway through the film, we sort of find that maybe he's had a slight recovery. And so then it becomes a whole different sort of film. And then it's only in the last half hour you get Eric Bana, for example, appears.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's in it.
No, I knew he was in it, but the trailer gives the impression he's like...
No, it's very, very near the end. And also Leslie Mann, who's Judd Apatow's wife, who's in it as well. And that's in the last half of the film. And they're kind of two different films, really.
Mm.
And given that it's quite a long film anyway, it's sort of 2.5 hours long, it could really have done with being spliced in the middle, really, because it is two different films.
Yeah.
So that was my only complaint.
I think also, given that they're... that couple and relationship are in the trailer... I think for the first half of the film, well, if you hadn't said that, I'd have been sat there at every point, thinking they're going to turn up now. Why? Yeah. Where are they? Why? Time's dragging on.
Well, that's actually what I thought. It's probably why I thought we were dragging a bit, is because I was running late for my gig. And I was there thinking, it's got to end soon, or I've got to just leave. And we haven't even seen Eric Banner yet. So, and I just late for my gig. They waited. my audience always waited for me. Exactly. But there was a lovely moment where, because Eric Banner, but I just want to call him Banner all the time. But he plays Leslie Mann's husband. Mm. And Leslie Mann is sort of the long-lost sweetheart of Adam Sandler's character. And so Eric Banner is not there for a little while, then appears, just walks the door and goes, oh, hi, I haven't seen you in ages. And it was a bit like Time Traveller's Wife. And just the way it sort of appeared, I thought he was going to say, oh, yeah, I've just been seeing us when we're 50, and, you know, we're all doing fine. But he's actually very good in it. Eric Banner is very good.
I never realised, I think until looking him up, when I saw he was in this, that he was a stand-up comic.
Exactly.
In Australia.
Yeah,
he was a big comedian in Australia, and then he suddenly turned up and started doing Troy and Hulk. And
it's, exactly.
It's all a bit weird.
No, he's very good.
He hasn't really done any comedic roles.
And also, he plays an Australian in this as well. He's really much more believable in this as an Australian than he has been as an American. So I think it's worth a look if you're bored. But there's enough good stuff out there at the minute with District 9 and 500 Days of Summer that it's not really worth rushing to the cinema.
Yeah, for. I think the length would put me off.
Yeah,
dodgy though that sounds, because it's if it just drags on a bit. I probably will go and see it if I get the opportunity, but. Yeah, I mean, films that overstay their welcome are not a good thing.
Yeah.
It was just like looking at the trailer, seeing a stand-up comic getting really depressed. It's just like, oh, well, okay.
Mm. Well, that is the other thing that I think can be a bit off-putting about it, is that they do what they do okay, but I think the reason I didn't come away going, wow, that was amazing, is because it's never that interesting to watch a lot of characters who are mostly really self-obsessed. Comedians generally are, myself probably included, but they generally are quite, you know, you're focused so much on your career, that's what they're all doing in this. And, you know, there are depressive characters, there are people who go through a journey and realise that, am I depressive? Oh, well, I suppose I am, but, oh, well, I've got a newfound love of life, but I'm just going to go out there and entertain my crowds once again and still be a bit self-obsessive. So no one really learns that much about, and it's not entertaining, it's not as hilarious as it could be as well. So it's only okay, I think, for that reason. That it's what's entertaining and interesting as a comedian is not necessarily interesting for everyone. So I think that's why there's not many stand-up comedy films made. It's entertaining to see live, but why look behind the scenes? We don't really...
No, that's true.
It's not often you go to a comedy gig and walk away thinking, you know, I wish I could be seeing the backstage bit right now and the comedian driving home crying to himself, I wish I could see that bit. No, you want to. You see the bit you paid for, which is the show. So save yourself some money, go to a comedy gig, and while you're there, paulcarenza.com's got a gig guide. You can go and see which comedy gig to go to.
Brilliant.
So good, that was that. And we should move on, really.
Yes, Julie and Julia.
Yes, indeed. Well, before we get on to Desert Island Flicks, I won't mention this for long, but out this weekend, in the UK at least, is Julian, Julia and Julian and Juliet and all these other people. All about cooking.
It was like the foursome version of the Shakespearean play.
Yes.
Brought it up to date.
Pretty much.
Slightly. Anyway, carry on.
It's a very different film than that.
Yes.
Right.
I went to a preview showing last week and it was full of middle-aged women and me.
And your wife.
And my wife.
Who is not
well,
a middle-aged
well corrected.
Woman. Yeah. I just thought I'd better step in there.
Well done there.
Because you clearly weren't going to.
Well done.
I left a pause and you carried on
now,
reading it.
I think I quite enjoy this film.
Well, yeah, but you are a middle-aged woman, Jen. So. Oh dear.
You can't say you can't.
No, I like cooking. I like baking.
You wouldn't know it to taste what you produce anyway.
Shut
sorry.
Up.
Sorry.
Don't you diss my cakes.
Oh dear.
But yeah.
You can diss a looks and a weight but not a cake. That's the rule.
No, well, yeah, I think that's why she's got the looks and weight she has. Because
exactly. To be fair, you probably would enjoy it. It is, I mean, the plot of the film is it's a true story as well. It's a true story.
Right, yes.
Julia or no, Julie, that's right, is the modern day one. She's played by Amy Adams.
Who's lovely.
Who's lovely.
Very true.
And Julia is played by Meryl Streep.
Who's fantastic.
Back in the 40s, 50s, I think it is. And both very good, both together in Doubt.
Yes.
A very different film about nuns. I think Doubt was a much better film, actually. But that's because it had a bit more to it, a bit more, whereas this was, cooking. Which is all very nice. But
if I wish you could see that. What you
A little bit camp. But the idea of it is that Amy Adams' character in the present day is bored And she just hears, and she's a writer as well, and not going so well for her. She hears that a friend of hers has just started a blog, which is very popular. And she thinks, yeah, I'm going to do a blog. What should I blog about? And she just randomly thinks, oh yeah, I know, I will cook every recipe in a cookbook, 500 recipes in a year. So she's got a year to do 500 recipes. And it's the first French cookbook published by Julia Child, who's this famous American cook. Apparently, if we've got any Americans listening, is she famous? I don't know her, but apparently, she's in the Smithsonian Institute and that sort of thing. Well, bits of her kitchen are in the museum. She's not in an institute.
They reanimated her Terminator style.
But no, they haven't. She died a few years ago, an old sad lady. So exactly, it's a bit. Well, I say sad just to make you feel bad about the Terminator comment. she's probably quite happy. I don't know, but she. So you cut between the two. You cut between Meryl Streep back in the 40s and 50s and getting herself set up as a cookbook publisher and a professional cook. Mm-hmm. And you see Amy Adams cooking them in the present day. And it's very light. It's funny at times. It's well acted. You've got... very good. Obviously, apart from the two main leads, you've also got...
Stanley Tucci.
Thank you. Stanley Tucci in the Meryl Streep era. And it's a nice film. It's nice.
Actually enjoyed it then?
It's nice. It's about as far as I'd go.
It's disposable.
But as a young man, that's actually pretty encouraging.
Well, that's right. I suppose I was in a room full of middle-aged women who were liking it as well. So they probably carried me along on their wave a certain degree.
The HRT was probably like permeating the air. Sort of luring you in.
I did walk
out. The hostage rescue team, because Paul was clearly there against his will.
Well covered.
I thought so.
So whether you see that or not, that will lead us on to our Desert Island Flicks this week.
Right.
If you're on a desert island, we're not going to give you food. We're going to give you a film about food. Just to make you feel really bad.
Just you look at it, then you can eat the screen.
Exactly.
And then get an electric shock.
So there are films about food, and we now must decide which our favourite is.
Well, I personally am going to go with Ratatouille, which is an animated film from a couple of years ago. Just because I remember I actually got the DVD, but haven't seen it all that recently. But I remember absolutely loving it. Mm. I know it was in the running. People were wondering if it was going to get a Best Picture nomination. And in the end, it didn't. It got Best Animated Picture. Mm. It's going to be where things get farmed out to. But the fact that it's animated may put some people off, or may put it in a sort of kids bracket. And it's really not. It's just a very good film about a rat who wants to become a chef and then teams up with a human chef and sort of makes it all happen. And it's just a very interesting story and carries you along. And quite moving as well.
I didn't like the fact they had to spell out on the poster how to pronounce it.
Like just Igor.
Exactly. The reason they do it, and the rubbish reason for doing it as well, is so that when parents go and ask at the box office, saying, I want two tickets for my kids to go and see Ratatouille, then the person goes, what? It's counting on the fact that both parent and person selling the ticket are both morons.
Yes, and neither of them can work out what
if one of them is a moron, but the other one isn't. At least the person goes, oh, you mean Ratatouille, certainly. Yeah. But they go, Ratatouille, you want Ratatouille? Don't know what you mean. No, not a clue. So each thing going, I want this one. It says, Ratatouille. Oh, yeah, click the thing, the button, hear the ticket. Anyway, so I'm getting quite astonished now, but anyway.
Yes, but that's my choice.
Good one, a good choice.
We are very appreciative of all your hard work in cinemas across the world. No, I just want to say that.
But also, I think the point I made last week is that anyone listening to this podcast is clearly going to be at least relatively clever.
Exactly.
Because, they took the effort to listen to this and they're understanding the words we say. They have an IQ above 4, quite clearly.
Maybe we should put in...
Whereas we're talking about the people, the 1-2-3s of the world. We're just mashing keypads with
their
hands.
I think as a subtitle after Movie Banter, we should spell it out phonetically. Movie Banter. Just to really nail home.
True.
To be fair, though, Paul, some of the names that you tried to pronounce over this podcast...
Oh, that's not fair! Yeah, so whatever the Bill and Ted one is, that's creeping... Is that 47?
It's this one, isn't it?
Is it this one?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah, if it is this one, I apologise in advance, dear listener, for the awfulness that has been inflicted upon your eyes.
I think it's all right. The title of the show, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, that's all right.
We'll show you later, Jim.
Okay.
This is the 43rd episode.
Yeah.
So that would make it Bill and Ted's XLIII Unt Adventure.
Ooh.
Yeah, Roman numerals big style.
Skill.
Oh yeah,
there fantastic. You go.
It's both better and worse than 20 VI Wojcicki.
Oh yeah,
that was That was a new low.
Anyway, food, films, yeah, Jen. Food, films, Jen.
I
the three things I like in the world.
Aww.
Sorry, two films I like in the world.
Okay. I think I'm going to go for pudding in the fact that I think I'm going to
yeah, pudding. But before that, Jen, time for a film.
I think I'd do chocolate.
Okay. Okay.
So just because it involves chocolate and Johnny Depp.
Yeah. No. I think it's a beautiful film. It looks very, very good, and just the fact that this one little shop can affect a whole community in such a big way, and just nice little touches, and you know, great. Yeah, very good. Classic. Yeah. A classic.
No, what's it mentioned? Oh, it's Funny People. That's right. There's a whole running thing throughout that about what a good film Chocolat is.
Oh, really?
But it's just sort of quite sweet. Just whenever they mention it, they go, "Yeah, Johnny Depp is." He's really good. He's just deep in there, isn't he? He made me feel a whole new love of mankind. Anyway, just going
to occasion. I wouldn't say it's necessarily Mr. Depp's best film in the world, but it's a good. Yeah. It was a good book, and it's a good film.
Yeah. And Paul, I think I might go for the Cook, the Thief, the Wife and His Lover, or Her Lover, or whichever
her
it
lover.
Is. Her Lover.
Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover.
Yeah. Which is, I think, Michael Gambon and Helen Mirren.
Yes, I know definitely Helen Mirren.
I haven't seen it in a long time. I've only seen it once, actually, years ago. And I remember finishing it thinking, I don't really want to see that again, ever, I think. or not for some time. Because it's quite dark. It's quite depressive. I think it's about, what, there's a cook... The thief is Michael.
Is there a cook? Is there a thief? Maybe his wife, and maybe she has a lover.
Might be
something like that.
That rings a bell. Michael Gambon is the thief, as in a big mob boss type thing. And his wife is Helen Mirren, but his wife is having an affair. That's the lover, you see. And the cook is the person who then cooks the lover and feeds the lover to, I think, Helen Mirren. But actually, then I think there's revenge, and Michael Gambon ends up having to eat the lover. So it's quite cannibalistic.
Yeah.
Quite dark. But as a revenge film, it's quite good.
Yes. Not entirely like Julie and Julia, then.
Not entirely.
Not entirely. Not much overlap.
The one that I want to see, I hear is very good, is Babette's Feast, which I hear is marvellous. About people who just decide to eat themselves to death via lots of the best food in the world.
Oh.
And apparently you watch it and the food just almost literally jumps off the screen at you and down your throat. So, apparently it's good. Yeah.
What's that? Isn't there an awful film, by the way? Maybe not awful. I don't know. I haven't seen it. With Catherine Zeta-Jones about a chef.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes, and
no reservations.
And Aaron Eckhart.
Oh, is that it? I remember it. Did it get panned, or
it
is that just my?
Yeah, it looks.
I've not seen that.
Poor. No, but nor have I.
It got deep panned, in fact.
Oh, deep panned.
We should probably finish.
Avoid that.
Yeah, avoid that. That's the one to avoid. Avoid that, but see good films, and tune in next week on Movie Banter. We'll be here. Will you? That's the question.
That's the most important thing. So please do. We'll see you next week.
And podcastmoviebanter.co.uk.
Yes.
Do email us.
Email us.
Thoughts,
let us know your
opinions.
And also, if you tweet us short reviews to @moviebanter, then we'll read them out, because that's one of the good things about
that's Twitter. That's a very good thing.
Little pocket reviews. We can just read them out. Hopefully funny, but maybe just interesting and good, whatever.
Good point. Twitter.com/moviebanter. You can tweet us things.
Send us reviews and we'll read you out.
And we'll put you on the show.
Yeah. So until then, we shall see you next week.
Ta-ra.
Bye.